Our guest speaker is someone I truly can say needs no introduction to anyone in this room. Regardless, I will mention that the so-called mayor for life, Jerry Abramson, is indeed the longest serving mayor in Louisville's 232-year history, having been elected 5 times for a total of 20 years. He is leaving office after having distinguished himself and his city through designation as a top 25 most dynamic mayor by Newsweek, as a top 20 mayor in America by U.S. News and World Report, as local public official of the year by Governing Magazine, and other such accolades. He also has served as president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. So he knows the mayor business. And since Metro Louisville will have a new person serving in that position in a few weeks, we asked Jerry to reflect on his own experiences and lessons learned, and to look forward to what he would advise his successor. Welcome, Jerry.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Dot. It's great to have you back in town. It's just great to have you back. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and what a great opportunity it is for me to visit with you today and talk a little bit about where we've been and where we are and where we hope to be going in our hometown here in Louisville, Kentucky. You know, I'm like many of you, I'm sure, that you have been watching the extreme makeover experience out in Fairdale and the one that we had several years ago. I was out at Fairdale in the middle of what was happening out there for the Lampe family, and you looked around and you saw all these workers working together in a collaborative way. You saw the neighbors excited about the new extreme makeover home being put together. You see a transformation, an extreme transformation of that home and ultimately what it will do to that neighborhood. And you realize that all that happened in a few days, but it happened because of teamwork. And so when I sort of think about being with you today, I began to think about that extreme makeover. And it sort of struck me that over the last 8 years since we've merged, and actually over the last 2 decades since I've had an opportunity to be a part of the leadership team here in our hometown, we really have gone through an extreme makeover also, a transformation that's made a difference in our hometown. And so I thought, you know, when you think about transformation, when you think about a community going through transformation, you think about merged government, which we went through over the last 8 years. You talk about a change in the vibrancy of the downtown, which has occurred over the last several years. You talk about looking to expand the green space and the parkland that we want for our hometown for generations to come. You talk about transformations. You talk about the fact that the MetroSafe facility was developed to the tune of about $70 million that now allows all the first responders throughout this community and the region, if necessary, during a crisis, to be able to connect with each other. When you talk about transformation, you talk about a new library after it was promised in the 60s out in Newburgh that we were able to develop and open up. You talk about a new library in Fairdale, which will almost quadruple the size of the existing small space that was sort of tucked into a community center. You talk about doubling the size at the Shawnee Library and creating an expansion there. When you talk about transformation, you talk about the medical research going on in this community. You talk about the education initiatives going on, the University of Louisville's engagement in research that evolves into businesses from the mine to the marketplace. And so when you look at all those, you think about teamwork. You think about collaborative approaches. You think about what's so very special to, at least in my judgment, about Louisville. And I, for one, appreciate how far we've come. And as I look around the room, there are many of you who have been here for many, many years as a part of Louisville's, the fabric and the texture of Louisville, and I hope you feel the same way in terms of how far we have come. I mean, imagine had we not moved on the airport to expand it, had we not relocated 4,000 people, 137 businesses, 14 churches, 2 community centers, and a school. Want me to go through that again? Imagine how we as a community would be today if we hadn't made that step. 27,000 jobs as a result of the UPS expansion, investment of $2 billion out at the Worldport, 127 businesses have located here because of the Worldport location. Imagine what it would be like if we hadn't made the investment on our waterfront. You know, it wasn't just yesterday where it was piles of sand and rock and coal and scrap yards and scrap materials, and now it's that beautiful green necklace along the waterfront that brings 1.5 million, 2 million people into the downtown at Waterfront Park that we now take for granted, and the opportunity to begin next year with the funds that we have to make the Big Four Bridge a connector to Indiana. I mean, imagine had we not moved in that direction, which took several decades. Imagine had we not thought about bringing the Louisville Slugger facility to downtown. You remember we used to play with the Redbirds out at Cardinal Stadium, a wonderful 40,000-seat football complex, but not particularly the best place for baseball. And the next thing you know, we're talking with the owners, we're developing a game plan, we take a risk, we float the bonds, and we develop a jewel box of a baseball park that people can go with their families, not spend a lot of money, but create a lot of energy and excitement, located at a corner of Preston and Main Street where some people thought we weren't making the right decision. And the next thing you know, $200 million of investment has literally been created all around that baseball park. I can remember the two aldermen at the time that voted against the project, both of which showed up on opening day to get their free tickets. Think about West Main Street. Think about the time we spent and the money we placed on what we now call Museum Row. As you walk along those brick sidewalks, as you see those brass tree grates that really reflect what those buildings used to be used for, there were folks who felt that that didn't make a great deal of sense in terms of infrastructure investment. And the next thing you know, look what's there, from Leadership Louisville to GLI. Even the University of Kentucky's got a facility right on Main Street. And Main Street, West Main Street's been selected by some big-time national group that thinks about things like this as the best block in America in terms of the energy and excitement and investment. Without Glassworks, without the ZerMed Tower, think about where we would be today if, in fact, those hadn't come to fruition. Think about Riverview Park, a park that many people had not really been aware of, hadn't been on your radar screen out at the end of Greenwood, past Pleasure Ridge Park High School, a beautiful, beautiful setting on the waterfront that had simply been left to its unfortunate situation of not having the investment and commitment. The Waterfront Development Corporation, at my request, has taken it over as a part of their investment, and now you go out there, a new play area, a new boat dock, expanded opportunities for a water park, and you're going to see even more things happen in what will very soon become a destination park in Southwest Louisville. And so when you think about it, think about before we talked about bicycle-friendly communities. You know, over in the last 8-10 years, you know, we began to realize walking paths and bicycle paths, those kind of exercise experiences, the Healthy Hometown Initiative, where we could reach out to groups that were involved in caring about nutrition, making sure that there were markets in every neighborhood that had fresh vegetables and fresh fruits. That kind of commitment was something that wasn't floating around in the past, and without our commitment, we wouldn't have had the opportunity to do that. And of course, think about downtown. I mean, you know, a dream of this community has been to have a vibrant center of our hometown. And when you look at the arena and all we went through to ultimately bring it to fruition, and then you look at the $60 to $100 million of investments occurring in restaurants and entertainment venues, in housing, both apartments and condominiums, you begin to see the energy and the excitement that a center of a community can provide to the community as a whole. And as I mentioned to the Downtown Development Corporation today at their quarterly meeting, you know, there is a book out, it's not just me saying it, there's a book out by a guy named David Rusk that shows those communities that have vibrant cores are those communities where the suburbs have created enhanced wealth beyond those cities that have decaying cores and the suburban areas around those decaying cores. So the reality is the energy and the excitement that has gone on in terms of the downtown is something that's very, very special, and we now are taking for granted when, in fact, we've worked on it for years and years. And remember the days of yesteryear when cities and county, a city and a county, a mayor and a county judge would try to one-upsman. Who would be the first one to speak and take a bow at a ribbon cutting? Who would be the next one to be able to say, well, I really am the person that you should thank Or when something went wrong, we'd go like this, and the mayor would blame it on the county judge, and the county judge would blame it on the mayor, and you, as citizens, never had an idea in terms of who was held accountable. That's all changed now. One government, one agenda, one council, one strong leader in the mayor's office, an opportunity to ensure that we speak with one voice and we have a common agenda. And when we're working on economic development projects, as I met with one about an hour and a half ago, to be able to be there speaking for the community with the company that's looking to relocate possibly to Louisville is something that has worked out exceptionally well, and how fortunate we have been. So that's the kind of transformation that so many of us take for granted, have lived through, seen occur, and yet it is something special. It is something special, especially compared to an awful lot of communities around the country during these tough financial years, tough financial revenue years. You know, we have cut one out of every five jobs in local government. Back in the old days when the city and county, we now have 20% plus less people working for local government, which is what businesses have had to work through and businesses have had to deal with. We've had to manage our way through very tough financial times to ensure that we could deliver the services people want and do it in a financially effective, or let's say cost-effective way. We've been able to do that. We've been able to reach out and cobble together, as I said earlier, $70 million from Washington, from the state, and from the local community to develop this Metro Safe, which, again, you may take for granted, but there are communities from throughout America that are coming into Louisville to see this communication center that gives us connectivity throughout the entire region of this country as a result of that investment. And we had to go to Washington. We had to get Louisville put on a list where we would get direct funding from Homeland Security. We were able to do that. We had $18 or $19 million came direct to us from Washington, plus the state, plus what we put in terms of our local money. We've become a regional center. Louisville, with the new merger, has really become a center for about 1.5 million people. And with that regional center commitment comes responsibility. And so now, when you're talking about transformation at Fort Knox, it's an issue we deal with. It's an issue we're engaged with up to our elbows, working with those folks that are moving in, making sure they have the kind of housing they want either in this community or in the surrounding communities, lobbying Frankfort to be sure the infrastructure is there to get people in and out of Fort Knox. When you're talking 4,000 new civilian employees, when you're talking about a new brigade moving into Fort Knox, if we're the regional center of this region, we've got to engage and work and support with them. But same thing when I meet with the county judge of Bullock County or the county judge of Shelby County or Spencer County or Oldham County. We've got so much more in common with each other that we're now working together as a region when it comes time for transportation access, for the kinds of things that would enhance the quality of life for all of the folks in this region, not just those inside the 376 square miles. And we focus on education. You have seen over the last 6-8 years a commitment from this community, with the business community joining with the public schools on Everyone Reads. We made a significant move in that meter from how many kids were not reading at grade level to how many now are. You've seen us start 3 years ago a program called Close the Deal, where we work with kids who have never aspired to go to college. And we've moved that needle where there are high schools in this community where 25% of the kids went to college. Now they're up to 75% based on the commitment of the public school system, the commitment of the business school, the commitment of local government, the Chamber of Commerce here, GLI, working with us. There was a school that had about $100,000 of financial aid and assistance. 3 years later, in working with us all, they have over $1 million of financial aid to help those kids go to school. And now we've set a goal. I created, as you know, the Mayor's Education Roundtable with all the presidents of the colleges and universities from both sides of the river. And we set a goal for 40,000 additional four-year degrees and 15,000 additional associate degrees to push and to be as aggressive as we can give our young people a chance to go on to college and to, once they get into college, stay through the college years to graduate. You say 40,000, how they, or 55,000, add the 40 and 15. 55,000 degrees is the name of this organization that will stay together once I leave office and will be an entity and a power force in and of itself. How are you going to get 55,000 degrees? Well, we work with the schools that we have in our community and try to make sure that the kids aspire and have the wherewithal to get in. We work with the colleges and universities once they get in to assist them in making sure they finish. We also go out into the business community. 90,000 people in our hometown have some college but never finished, dropped out for one reason or another, for family needs or whatever it might happen to have been. And now we're going to be engaging. In fact, the GLI just got an $800,000 grant from a foundation to work with those 90,000 and those employers to get those people back into school as non-traditional students. And then ultimately, as we attract people from other communities into Louisville, they'll bring their college degrees with them. So you put all that together, and the hope is by 2020, we'll be focusing on just that. So 55,000 new degrees, because you gotta have a quality of life, and you gotta have skilled and productive young people ready to ensure that the future of our hometown is as strong as it can possibly be. But I think the greatest, in my judgment, the greatest makeover of this community since 1985, when I was elected in November of that year, is the ability and the spirit and the energy to see the community's glass half full. That was not the case when I took office in January of 86. This community in January of 86 saw the glass half empty more often than not, didn't think we could compete at any level regarding anything. And now, I mean, it just continues to grow and continues to expand. And we continue to be more successful each and every time we're engaged in a competitive situation for grants, for opportunities, for businesses, for quality of life enhancements, for the investment that makes our hometown so special. So what happens next? Well, we've got an outstanding young man who's going to be taking my position. He's smart. He's energetic. He gets it in terms of the business structure and the focus of working to ensure job opportunities and economic growth occurs. I'm very, very optimistic about the future with Greg in charge. I really believe strongly that as a community, what we need to do and what I would challenge you all to do and those who are watching on TV is to realize that we still have miles to go before we sleep. You know, we've built a pretty good foundation since we've merged city-county government. And that, based on that, we now have a foundation for the next group to take it to the next level. And that's about as good as we can do. But it's got to have people engaged. They've got to engage, and you have to engage as citizens. You know, Louis Brandeis said the most important political position in America is the position of citizen. And you've heard me say more often probably than you want to hear again, I got 700,000 residents in my city. I got 1.4 million residents in my community, but I don't have 700,000 citizens or 1.4 million residents, 1.4 million citizens in this community. You all, because of your interest and engagement in the issues of the day and the concerns about what's happening all around us, you obviously are citizens. It's more than just going to work and coming home and taking care of your family, which is important. It then takes another dimension to care about those around you, to engage in the debate and the dialogue about issues that are important, to let elected officials and others in your community know where you stand and try to draw them in to the discussion, whether it's a faith-based organization, a neighborhood association, whatever it happens to be. We need more citizens in this community to join and support Mayor-elect Fisher and others who will be leading the future of this community to ensure that we're as strong as we can possibly be. And I certainly, as a Louisville resident, and will continue a Louisville resident for many, many years to come, am very, very supportive and excited about Greg's leadership and look forward to working with him and with you all in the years to come. It has been a pleasure to be a part of the leadership team of my hometown for these many years. And I hope that in the future I can play a role to be of assistance even more so. So thank you all very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
He really doesn't need a moderator, so I'm going to go sit down, eat my cookie.
Oh, cookie. Okay.
I've got a whole plate of cookies over here. But Jerry is going to just take your questions from Sandy Richardson and Chris Hudson that you all have filled out on your question forms. Continue to fill them out and wave them in the air, and they will come and pick them up. So, Jerry, it's yours.
Sandy Richardson from Seneca High School.
That's
yes, Sandy.
Yes. Jerry, there are lots of questions, actually comments that have come in thanking you for your leadership over the years, and I think there are a lot of people who would love to express that to you if they haven't already personally. So But one of the first questions then is, please tell us what you are most proud of throughout all your years as mayor.
You know, I get that question a lot, and everybody's always looking for brick and mortar. They want me to say the airport expansion. They want me to say the baseball park. They assume I'll say the waterfront or the arena, you know, that kind of hard stuff that you can touch and feel. I really go back to what I mentioned in my presentation, and that is the spirit. I mean, there is a change in the spirit in this community from when I took office in January of 86 to where we are today. And it started with Presbyterian USA. And I don't know how many of you all remember way back when we went out as a community to try to, thank you, Dot, try to carry the message about how we could compete with New York and Atlanta and Chicago and Kansas City and Dallas. And Dot was there, and the Presbyterian leadership in this community was fired up. But we came together as a community. We brought everybody from different religious backgrounds, socioeconomic, neighborhood backgrounds, and we fought the fight. In fact, we fought the fight to the extent that we went to the convention. We took the Archbishop with us, who was there for a day. The Courier-Journal, fortunately, flew down a newspaper that morning that showed that if, in fact, they were going to go to Kansas City, it would cost the church a great deal of money. We gave that out at the Biloxi Arena to every member who walked in to vote of the 900 or 1,000. But what was so special is we had to make a minority report because they had decided to go to Kansas City. And again, the Courier-Journal's religious writer did a great job. We gave out the facts. We went to all the different groups. And back home, people were calling. Are we going to make it? Are we going to make it? Are they going to go to New York? Will they go to Kansas City? What? And the next thing you know, we were successful. And to me, that really started sort of a yes, we can compete mindset in this community. From there, it grew. And a lot of people played a role in the success of the Presbyterians. But as a community, I think that was the first time that we began to say, yes, we could. And then I could go through a gazillion others after that that showed every time we were in a competitive situation, we've been able to hold our own and then some regarding other hometowns. So I think it's the spirit. I think it's the why not. I think it's the let's go make it happen. And the citizenry of this community who have stepped up and given their time. You know, there are business leaders, and then there are the rest of us who just sort of roll up our sleeves and help. When you talk about 10,000 people working for Everyone Reads, you know, giving a half an hour a week to a child, talking with him or her and reading with them, 10,000 real, normal people who took their lunch hour or stopped in the morning on the way to work or stopped in the way on the way home. That's the kind of yes, we can make a difference that this community now has as a part of its DNA. And it's not easy to bring about, but we've done it over a couple of decades. And I think the future is bright in that regard.
Mayor Abramson, while there are a lot of questions, interesting questions about what you like the most and strengths of your successor and things looking forward, here's a rather pointed question that I'm going to read word for word. And you were talking about results and competition. According to Hal Heiner and Greg Fisher's campaign literature, Indianapolis and Nashville each added 50 to 60,000 new jobs during the last decade. Cincinnati added 20,000 jobs, and Louisville lost 2,200 jobs in the last decade. Why has Louisville done so poorly compared to our regional sister cities in economic development?
Yeah, I'm very hesitant to question the figures because the two outstanding candidates put them forward as reasons to vote for them. But I would tell you that we have done better than that. More importantly, as we have developed our niche, in fact, the most recent Moody's report shows that Louisville, as compared to the 25 communities in our region, is best prepared, actually second best, if I'm not mistaken, second best prepared to be able to take off based on all the investment and all the infrastructure and the way we have done what we have done. When you look at 1,100 jobs coming in from China and Mexico at GE, when you look at Ford Motor, which has yet to even announce the growth that's going to occur, when you look at the 3,000 to 5,000 jobs that will be announced shortly as we move forward on Museum Plaza, which is looking better and better, when you look at the three headquarters companies that we've received opportunities to draw into Louisville just in the last 6 months, one out of California, one out of Philadelphia and one out of Palm Beach, Florida, with 120, 140 in each one of those groups bringing corporate headquarters jobs into Louisville. I feel very confident that this community can compete. The other thing that I take great pride seeing Chief White is that when you compare and contrast communities, as I hear from business leaders now who want to know about the quality of life, the issue when I started in 86, all they wanted to know was the financial incentives. Now what you hear about is, tell me about the quality of life. Tell me about the arts, tell me about schools, tell me about the neighborhoods, tell me about the parks, tell me about, and it goes through those kinds of things. And they also talk about, tell me about the safety. And you know, 7 out of the last 10 years in this community under Chief White's leadership, 7 out of the last 10 years, we've been in the top 10 safest large city defined by 500,000 and above, safest communities in America. And when you compare and contrast that to Indianapolis, to Memphis, to St. Louis, to Cincinnati, to Columbus, Ohio, you see none of those communities are anywhere near the top 10 and creates an opportunity for the chief and his leadership to continue. So, you know, there are some strengths, there are some weaknesses, but I think we are primed, we are really teed up to take this community to the next level.
Okay. This is a two-part question. What is your greatest frustration / disappointment over your 20-plus years as mayor? And if you had a do-over, what would it be?
My biggest frustration, and you all won't even remember, but in the first term when I was mayor, I shut down Smoke and Joe, which was the old incinerator in Louisville, 3 years before the EPA was going to require it, because I wanted to bring to a head a concern that I had, which was the fact that we have one and one only landfill, and that I thought the investment in a garbage to steam facility that would provide an opportunity to sell the steam to BF Goodrich and to be able to be a regional center to be able to burn the garbage and generate the steam would have been very, very positive for the community. It was a new concept. It ultimately was built in North Carolina, was successful in North Carolina. But I was unable to bring that about and to gain the number of votes necessary on the Board of Aldermen to bring that forward. Although I had worked with the School of Engineering at U of L and the Speed School was right on board and everybody bought into the technology, we still were never able to bring that to fruition. So that, to me, was a real disappointment. Now, when you say, what would you do over? I would have merged city-county government back in the late 60s. That's what I would have done. And if we had done that, just imagine where we'd be today.
Mayor Abrams.
I'd take merger in the 70s. I'd take merger in the 80s. I mean, I didn't mean to just go back to when Indianapolis and Nashville, as you had mentioned, when they got it and they developed their approach. But you know, I think we really missed out on it. You hear people from cities that haven't consolidated in our area, like Columbus, like Cincinnati, like St. Louis, etc., that are just salivating over the successes that are occurring as a result of our ability to speak as one and to have a single agenda for our hometown.
Well, I'm going to play reporter on this one because I really want, I understand your answer to that question, but the do-over is specifically to your administration because that was, 60s was before you, as I recall.
Well, but
from our days at Seneca.
I fought the fight in 1981 and fought the fight in 1982 in favor of merger, and We lost by 6,000, and we thought this was the time that, no, we lost by 1,500. And then we came back a year later, and then we lost by 6,000. We were going in the wrong way. And so, to me, that it makes all the difference. I mean, you had to be the mayor of the old city with this competitive situation with the county and be now the leader of the public side of the agenda in this community now that we're merged. I mean, the fact that we can asphalt a road from where it begins to where it ends, as compared to simply asphalting a road to this imaginary line called City County, taking down our asphalt trucks, taking them back to the garage, calling over to the county saying, we're ready. They get theirs geared up, go to that imaginary line and finish the road. We can now do the entire road and save money doing it. There's so many things that have occurred that I have seen in the 8 years since merger that I just wish we had had 10, 12, 15 years earlier.
Mayor Abramson, you bring up a great point when you talk about how businesses view our community and what they look for. They used to look for numbers, and now they're asking questions about the arts, which we check the box on. parks, which we checked the box on, but the third thing you brought up was education.
Right.
And we are really struggling. We've got no less than almost a dozen questions from our audience that reference education and are using words like shockingly poor, surprisingly bad, lack of progress. Although we know that doesn't directly fall under your jurisdiction, it does in other cities like New York. A lot of people are interested in your comments on what we can do to address some of the shortfalls we have in education in Jefferson County.
Yeah, you're right. Cities like Chicago, Boston, Seattle, New York took over their school systems. Cleveland most recently. That's not the case here, and I have been a strong supporter of the school board. I am a proponent of local decision-making. I have always been a proponent of local decision-making. I think city folks know best what the city needs, not the state telling us, not the federal government telling us. We have in this Commonwealth and here in this community a system of publicly electing our school board members. In fact, half of them were just up for election in this most recent time. We also have surveys that have shown that 84-85% of the parents who have children in the public schools are satisfied with the choices that they have to be able to send their child to a magnet of this type or a magnet of that type. And the expanding magnets, such as Lincoln as an example, if you've got a first grader who's inclined to be in music, you now go into the gymnasium. Instead of a gymnasium there, they've got 27 baby grand pianos where they're teaching music along with everything else that you need to know as a first, second, third, and fourth grader. So I am a person who believes, as some great person once said, in terms of our school system, you mend it rather than end it. And mending it is literally to focus on how do we make it better. And you've seen school board members, and they're elected by their constituents in their specific geographic areas. They were all reelected. And you've seen them talk about how to mend some of the approaches. Never take your eye off the ball that the overwhelming majority of students in this public school system are doing quite well, go on, in fact, to do exceptionally well in higher education thereafter. We do have pockets of difficulty. I mentioned our Close the Deal, where I'm in four different high schools. When you get a high school with only 25% of the kids aspiring to go to college, you have an issue. But we engaged, and we're up to 75% of those kids going through college. Now we've got to get the colleges and community and four-year colleges ready to assist them. You know, we're very fortunate in Louisville. The Broad Foundation 5 years ago selected Louisville as one of the five best urban, metropolitan school systems, public school systems in America. So there are outstanding opportunities for young people to receive a good education and to move on. We've got to do better. And as mayor, the role that I have played in terms of creating the Close the Deal program to get kids to aspire, as mayor, as I have done, to do everything I can do to support the school board as it develops its game plan, that's the role you play. Local elected officials, public school board members. They're the ones that spend the time, understand the facts, and ultimately make the decisions.
Here's one brief follow-up question. In your roughly quarter of a century in leadership in this community, have you ever had a business that was considering relocating here express concern about the quality of public schools?
You always have businesses that ask about the schools. When you begin to tell them that the chairman of the board of this corporation and that the number two person in that corporation's children are in the public schools, when you begin to tell them the options that are available for their kids and their employees' kids to go to school, when you begin to share with them how the school system will sit down and work them through the system, because that's the real issue. If 84-85% of the parents in this community appreciate the public school system, approve of their children in the school system and how it's working, if you can go get through, if you can, what's the word I'm looking for? Not manage, but navigate through, you're doing exceptionally well. The concern is always, and it's an issue that the school system has taken to heart. They now have a whole section within the Jefferson County Public Schools that engage with new businesses and new employees coming in to assist them with their children to better understand their needs, whether they have special need children, or their interests, whether they want to go into math or science or music or engineering or things of that nature. So they have set up that process to respond to that question, the question being, tell me about your school system.
Okay, another question.
And also let me tell you that when I talk to other mayors who are having great difficulty with their urban school system, everything in life is relative. Relatively speaking, we are so fortunate to be able to have this system where parents feel engaged, where parents appreciate choice, which is very different than most other school systems, that we're able to use that as a selling point, along with our parochial and private schools, which are very, very fine also, to be able to give people making decisions options for their kids. Yeah.
Okay. What has been done over the last few years regarding the looming pension crisis on both the local and state levels?
Well, I wish there were. There is no pension crisis on the local level.
Okay.
The state level has created the pension crisis all
over
the state.
On the local level, right.
Just to tell you how it works, all the people inside local government pay into a pension plan. And that pension plan is required of us by Frankfurt. So they send me a bill every year. This past year was like $80 million. Year before, 2 years before, it was $60 million. Help me, Jane. Am I about right? Okay, $66 million, and we simply have to pay it. We have no and, ifs, or buts. We simply have to pay it. And so when you look at the commitment from cities and counties around the state, we're pretty much paid up because we've had no choice. The legislature, on the other hand, has had choices. And sometimes they pay, and sometimes they haven't paid all that they should have paid. And as a result, there is great difficulty in the pension plan in Frankfurt, and there are similar difficulties in pension plans in every state across the union. And so it is a major, major concern. One of our business leaders called it a ticking time bomb, that ultimately the legislature and the governor are going to have to get a grip on, both in terms of new employees that are starting and understanding the legal opportunities for tools that could be used to better streamline the existing individuals on the plan. It is not easy. It's easy to draw a line today and say, as of tomorrow, everybody who comes online gets a different pension. We'll get that benefit 10, 15, 20 years from now. The question is, what happens now? And that unfunded health care portion that's just sitting out there waiting to bite everybody, it is a very difficult issue. David Jones Sr. and a group of folks came together with under Governor Fletcher, I think it was, who developed a blue ribbon panel, and they have a lot of recommendations, and they shared them with the legislature last time. A few of them were passed. Many of them, no one was ready yet to bite the bullet.
Mayor Abramson, all right, so we're Possibility City. We look on the bright side now. The attitude of the citizenry of this community has changed. We've got great parks. We've got Waterfront Park, we've got vibrancy in neighborhoods, we've got all these things that you've laid the groundwork for, and we're ready to take off.
There's a but coming.
Yes. Yeah.
But what would you consider to be, all of those things said, what do you consider to be the greatest challenges facing the Fisher administration as they move into the next 4 years?
Well, there's the short term and there's the long term. As I told Greg, the short term is, it will snow after January 3rd. And I said to the mayor-elect, now that he's selected the police chief, the next person he ought to select is the individual in charge of knowing where our salt is, understanding where our trucks are, and understanding how to get them out on the street. Now, God forbid the snow starts at 5 in the morning, because if it starts at 5 in the morning, no matter how prepared he is, when the trucks get out, they get caught in the middle of the rush hour, and people will be complaining and complaining. On the other hand, if we're lucky and the snow starts at 6 or 7 o'clock after the rush hour at night, and you get the whole evening to work through it, when we all get up in the morning and get onto our roads, we'll say, gosh, these guys have their act together because it'll be clean. So short-term focus, the nitty-gritty, the snow, the potholes, the traffic lights, the curbs, the sidewalk, you know, all that stuff that you all don't care about unless you trip over something or create a situation where it creates a problem for you. That kind of nitty-gritty gets done, and if you can do those things, then it gives the community confidence in following you on the bigger things. If you can't get those things done, then when it comes time to say, well, we're going to expand the airport and, you know, relocate 4,000 people, they say, man, you can't even fill the potholes. You know, what are you talking about? So we talked about that sort of nitty-gritty. And the other issue, obviously, that Greg has talked about a great deal and brings a great deal of expertise is the opportunity for the creation of jobs. I mean, as recently as Saturday at the Breeders' Cup, I had two business corporate executives representing two different businesses, one in Utah, one in Illinois, looking to relocate, possibly to Louisville. And we had I had Greg to the table where we were hosting them to be sure the connection was made. One that I met today, again, making sure the connection is made. Working with GLI in a hand-in-glove relationship, we have been very successful. And my hope is, and the real challenge for him, and as I say, I see some good things coming online. Museum Plaza comes online, you're talking thousands of jobs. You know, the bridges come online, you're talking gazillions of jobs. When you're looking at Ford's expansion, when you're looking at GE continuing to grow, there are some good news. And with his entrepreneur focus, you know, we have begun the drumbeat of life science, biotech, startup companies being important in this community. We've gotten some startups that have done very, very well. And I think you'll see him bringing a very special expertise to create an atmosphere where entrepreneurs feel that they can take a risk, and if things don't work out, they can, you know, step up and go down to the next risk and take another risk. That's a change, and I think he'll be able to bring that and bring it aggressively.
Along those lines, what is your single most important piece of advice for Greg Fisher?
And snow and ice.
And are you giving Greg advice on who to retain and who to let go in your administration?
Yeah, I had an opportunity to meet with the mayor-elect for about 45 minutes the other day, the day after the election, actually. And we have set up a transition approach. In fact, he was to announce this morning, I suspect he did, his transition team. We have my chief of staff, and along with Rick Johnstone, working together to be the point people that can connect his folks with our departments. There are some of our employees that want to stay and are willing to stay. There are some that are not interested in staying and are moving on to other things. And what I have offered to Greg, and he said he would take advantage of at the appropriate time, is he's taking applications for people who are interested in working in government. And if there are some that are already directors or chiefs or whatever it happens to be, that he wants to know the strengths and weaknesses of, I'm certainly prepared with the door closed to share with him so he can make his own decision regarding the people that he wants around him. So, as I said, my advice to him was pick really good people, which I'm sure he will, and most importantly, be ready for the snow. I've been there, folks. I mean, I was there when we couldn't find the chains, when that big, huge storm occurred in 91. Is that the one you brought me to work? 91, was that right? 94. I was there, and my works director couldn't find the chains for the tires. That never happened again. But I learned a lesson.
The federal government, arguably, in all of our lifetimes, has never been more judicious with giving out money than this specific time, especially for shovel-ready infrastructure projects. More than one questioner was interested in knowing, pay no attention to the TV cameras, do you really believe that a bridge will be built across the Ohio River in any of our lifetimes?
I'm prepared to look into the camera and say, since I have worked on this project for over 25 years, that yes, I believe it will happen. Yes, I believe there will be tolls. Yes, I think the tolls will ultimately be a buck or less for those that commute. And yes, I believe that you will see over the next year and a half or so construction to begin. And yes, I believe in the next decade to 12, 13 years, you will see the two bridges and the reconstructive Spaghetti Junction occur in this community. And I say that because we are literally becoming the bottleneck for the southeastern part of the United States. The flow of goods and services and people from north to south in this part of the country is literally, as we speak, the Kennedy Bridge is at 105% capacity. As we speak, the Sherman-Minton Bridge, if you saw that article the other day, is missing a bolt. Now, I don't know how you were when you were a kid and had a rector set, but there was a reason for every bolt to be somewhere. Now, so you got problems with the existing bridges. We've already gotten over capacity with the existing bridges. If UPS is going to continue to grow, GE, and you can go through them all, Ford and all the others, we have got to have the flow of goods and services across this part of the United States. And I think, and having had lunch in Washington with the Secretary of Transportation, with six other mayors talking about major, significant national projects that need to be funded, Mayor of St. Louis, bridge over Mississippi. The mayor of Seattle need $3 billion to get all the stuff off the boats, the containers off the boats and out into the United States on those 18-wheelers. The mayor of San Diego, we're backing up all the traffic because they can't get the goods through the border crossing. We need another border crossing in and out of Mexico. There are so many major national projects that this country has got to literally handle, or we're going to bring this economy to a screeching halt. And my hope is, and I've gone on record with your camera right there, that I think you will see it in the next decade.
Here's a follow-up. In the time it's taken us to discuss the bridge.
And the studies and the money.
Other cities have built magnificent skyscrapers. Boston buried 78 miles of interstate under downtown.
No. We, the American people, built the underground in Boston. Boston didn't build that. We, the American people, built the subway system in Washington. Washington didn't build that. So we, the American people, at least I've been asking, where is our largesse to be able to invest in our community? As we were there for Boston, we'd like Massachusetts to now be there for us.
What's been the obstacle? Acknowledging that what you're saying is, what's been the obstacle to us getting our fair share?
Well, again, depending on how long you followed it, first we had to fight, did we want an East End bridge or do we want a downtown bridge? And the statistics and the model showed that an East End bridge would take no more than 6% to 8% at the max of the traffic from the downtown to the East End bridge. And therefore, the East End bridge was an economic development opportunity. The downtown bridge was a congestion mitigation issue. The federal government funds congestion mitigation. The federal government doesn't fund economic development opportunities. So what we decided to do, since we were arguing often on both sides of the river and between the old city and the old county government, we decided to put them together because the East End Bridge could not stand on its own for federal funding. We put them together with the aspect of reconstructing Spaghetti Junction, and we said this will literally resolve the issues for the future of this community. Studies had been done, studies and studies and studies. Until Governor Beshear and until Governor Daniels stepped in and said, we have got to get these things done, we would not be in a position of having a bi-state authority with the wherewithal to be able to do what's necessary to do the financing. Without those two governors' commitment, we would not have the chance over the next decade to make this come to fruition. And how did we get to this point? In the old days, some of you might remember, the federal government used to spend 80%, they would cover the cost of 80% of federal highways and federal bridges. And the state and local community was good for the other 20%. Because of the financial crisis in Washington, and this happened before the last two or three years, because of the dollars being spent every week in Afghanistan and Iraq, et cetera, because of the financial wherewithal, because the 80% to 20%, those dollars came from the Highway Trust Fund, which now we are energy conscious. We're telling people to drive less, to buy cars that have more miles to the gallon. So the amount of gas tax, which is the only way we fund the federal Highway Trust Fund, is going down. We barely have enough money in that fund to be able to maintain, barely, what we have, better yet, build on an 80-20 basis the future. And therefore, the federal government has stepped away and said to states, instead to localities, you're on your own. So put in a toll, develop a fee, create some financing mechanism, because we, the federal government, who used to be there at 80-20, are no longer a partner with you. And that's how we got to where we are.
Okay, since that was a tough question, the final question is going to be a softball.
Oh, good.
Actually, it's two softballs. One is, what do you feel are the strengths that you possess that have enabled you to be a successful mayor? And secondly, what is the most important unknown or little known achievement of the Abramson years?
Well, the first thing I'd say is you can take my class in leadership at Bellarmine, and I'd be more than happy to lay that all out for you. People ask me to define leadership. I think it has to do, I think I'm a pretty quick study. I think I'm a good listener. I think I ask the tough questions so I get the right information. And I think I can crystallize all of that information into an ultimate game plan and that I have the God-given gift to be able to articulate that game plan and to get people to follow me based on a clear vision of exactly where we've been, where we are, and why we need to go in this direction. So I think that's where I've been very fortunate. If you can't write or if you can't articulate in an oral way the feelings that you have and the issues that you want to deal with, you're in great difficulty in terms of providing leadership for any organization. And the thing that unknown. Well, the one that's unknown to most of you all, but known to those of us that were at the festival or the event in support of the life of my former deputy mayor Joan Ream. And when we came to that ceremony after she had passed, and she had been so actively involved with Bill Summers, my other deputy mayor, and we have worked together for so many years, she wrote her concluding comments to be read at this ceremony of her life, this appreciation of her life. And she said at the end two things. She said, "Build the bridges and go Cards." And that's where we are. Thank you all.